Good morning, everyone. Well, 8.5 years that I've preached here, I have never slept past an alarm. Today was the day. But it's Father's Day, so maybe you'll forgive me if sermon's not quite as organized and the thoughts don't flow quite as smoothly as normal. But I think I can get through this anyway. I want you to and me to listen to the words of two men who walked this earth before us. One was a very happy man, and one was a very unhappy man. And I hope by listening to these two men, it will just clarify in our minds what it is that we really want in life. One of these men was the son of David, who was appointed to rule over Israel in place of his father David when David died, Solomon. And Solomon got off to a good footing with God, and God appeared to him in a dream early in his reign and told him to ask for anything that he wanted. And of all the things Solomon could have asked for, he asked for wisdom, that he might rule God's people well. And God honored his request by not only giving him unparalleled wisdom, but also unparalleled wealth and power and fame. I want to read to you just some of the descriptions of Solomon in 1 Kings. Just listen to what this man had. 1 Kings 4, beginning at verse 29, describes his wisdom. It says, "Now God gave Solomon wisdom and very great discernment and breadth of mind like the sand that is on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the sons of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt, for he was wiser than all men." And then it mentions some of the famous wise men of old that he excelled. "And his fame was known in all the surrounding nations. He spoke 3,000 proverbs. His songs were 1,005. He spoke of trees, from the cedar that is in Lebanon, even to the hyssop that grows on the wall. He spoke also of animals and birds and creeping things and fish. Men came from all peoples to hear the wisdom of Solomon, from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom." And so he's given a brilliant mind and just incredible analytic skills and observing skills, this incredible knowledge-gaining apparatus. So he became a world-famous sociologist and botanist and zoologist and poet and songwriter and life counselor. And people came from all over the earth to hear Solomon's wisdom. In 1 Kings 10, it says that all the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom, and they would bring gifts of silver, gold, garments, weapons, spices, horses, mules, just to have an appointment with Solomon. Well, wouldn't you love to be that brilliant and famous and have the whole world just in awe of you? 1 Kings 4 and verse 21 describes his power. It says, "Now Solomon ruled over all the kingdoms from the river," that is the Euphrates, "way over in the east to the land of the Philistines, on the edge of the Mediterranean Sea and to the border of Egypt. They brought tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life." He was the most powerful man in the world. How would you like to have the power to just snap your fingers, state your heart's desire, and it would be done? And Solomon was probably the wealthiest man to have ever lived. 1 Kings 10 describes his wealth, and if you look at what's described there and the income he had coming in every year and you convert it to modern day dollars, you realize that if you were to stand up next to Solomon, Bill Gates, Donald Trump, Andrew Carnegie, some of these other names we associate with great wealth, they would look like broke people compared to Solomon. He was the wealthiest man to have walked the earth, as far as we know. How would you like to never have to think about whether or not you could afford something again? That if you like it and money can buy it, it's yours. And 1 Kings 10 also says that Solomon came to have 700 wives and 300 concubines. And unfortunately, it also says that these wives turned his heart away after other gods. And he became no longer wholly devoted to God because of the influence of these women. And so if you were to depict Solomon in a modern way, he'd be kind of a mixture of Albert Einstein, Bill Gates, Hugh Hefner, and just magnified. Surely this was the happy man, right? We're going to go to Ecclesiastes. Turn over there if you would, and we're going to listen to some words from Solomon. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 1 says, "The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem." This is Solomon. And he begins here with his summarizing observation of everything about human existence. This man who had it all. "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher, "vanity of vanities, all is vanity." And that word vanity comes from a Hebrew word that means literally breath or vapor. And he's saying all that I have and all that people want, all that people work for, everything about human existence is just, there's no substance, there's no significance, there's no meaning, there's no lasting value to it. It's just barely there and it's gone. Or let me illustrate it this way. Here's Solomon's perspective of things. Here's the significance of all of your schooling and all of the knowledge you gain. Here's the significance of all of the wealth that you work so hard for. Your popularity, your position that you work for. And then pretty soon, this is what happens to all that you accumulate, all that you achieve in this world. That's his perspective of everything. Vapor of vapors. It's not even much of a vapor. It's a vapor of a vapor. Vanity of vanities. That's everything in this world. And then the next verse, verse 3, he says, "What advantage does man have in all his work which he does under the sun?" This man who had everything, seemingly, is questioning whether life is worth living. Look at verse 16. Ecclesiastes 1. "I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased in wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me. My mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I realize that this also is a striving after wind, because in much wisdom there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain." I read some articles this week about how very gifted intellectually people, genius people, are often very vulnerable to what's called existential depression. Existential means relating to our existence. And when you talk about the existential questions, you're talking about the big questions about our existence. What's this all about? What's the meaning of life? What's the purpose of life? What ought we do with our lives? And people who are very smart and very thoughtful sometimes cannot help but see how fleeting life is, how futile everything is that we do in this world. And they see that this world does not offer the deepest longings of our heart. It doesn't fulfill it. There is not the satisfaction that we long for that is offered in this world. And Solomon's knowledge and his wisdom, he could see that, and it was causing him pain. Well, chapter 2, verse 1, "I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure, so enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it is madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine, while my mind was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. And so he immersed himself in the party life, in wine and women and comedy. I think he had, you know, the best wine ever, and he had beautiful women. He had the best comedians in the world on call, that just to come before him and do their thing and make him laugh. And he found that all of that pleasure was but momentary and shallow. It didn't bring fulfillment and lasting satisfaction, and he got bored with it all. And he says, so, verse 4, I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself, palaces, really. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself, and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, and I had home-born slaves. I also possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold, the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers, the pleasures of many men, many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. And so he built and acquired and bought everything he could imagine that he might want. And then he says, I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done, and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity and striving after wind, and there was no profit under the sun. In other words, he says there was a measure of enjoyment and pleasure in the work and in the accomplishing of these things. But that joy I had in the work and that sense of accomplishment, that was my reward in all of this. It's kind of like if you've ever built a huge puzzle, you know, one of those 1,000-piece puzzles. It's kind of fun to build a puzzle, isn't it? And it's kind of, there's some enjoyment in figuring out where the pieces go and seeing it come together because of your efforts. And then you finally put that last piece on, and there's a bit of joy when you say, yes, I did it. Everybody look, I did this. But what more reward do you get than that when you build a puzzle? And you might leave it out on the table for a day or two in case anybody cares to see that you built the puzzle. Some people actually put glue on it and they hang it up on their wall. They think maybe somebody might care that they built the puzzle, but most of us realize nobody cares, and there's nothing more to be gained from building the puzzle, and so you take it apart and you put it back in the box. And Solomon says, this is like everything I built and everything I accomplished. I could see good in my labor. There was some sense of accomplishment there. But that was my reward for all my labor. Have you experienced this in life? Maybe you want a new car. And so you work hard and you save up your money and you do research on cars and you find the kind you want and you search for a good deal and you're getting excited about getting this new car. You find a good deal and then you're excited to buy it and you're excited to drive it off the lot and you're excited for a day or two or three to have it, and then the excitement wears off and then life's back to how it was before you had the car. And then you turn to something else to make you happy and you work for it and you're excited to get it, and then you get it. And then you're back to life's dull again. It just doesn't bring the fulfillment and the satisfaction we're longing for. Now, I think of, when I think about that, this guy that the police found his body several years ago. He committed suicide, and on his body, when they found it, was $30,000 in cash and a note which read this: "I have discovered during my life that piles of money do not bring happiness. I am taking my own life because I can no longer stand the solitude and boredom. When I was an ordinary working man in New York, I was happy. Now that I possess millions, I am infinitely sad and prefer death." So I think, you know, there's more reward in the building of the puzzle than there is in having a completed puzzle. And Solomon had discovered that painfully. Well, he says in verse 12, "So I turned to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? And I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness." In other words, there is some advantage to wisdom in that as a wise man, it's like you go about life able to see rather than blind. And you can see how to avoid certain traps and painfully bumping into stuff. And you can see, you know, the smoothest way to get what you want in life, and your relationships are better. There is that advantage to wisdom. But then he says, "And yet I know that one fate befalls them both. Then I said to myself, as is the fate of the fool, it will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as in the coming days all will be forgotten, and how the wise man and the fool alike die." And can you, maybe are you starting to see what Solomon could not see? From Solomon's perspective, it looked like life ends at the grave. And he wasn't able to see much of anything beyond that. 1 Timothy 2, or 2 Timothy 1 says that Jesus brought life and immortality to light through the gospel. And Jesus is the one that helps us to see that there is such thing as resurrection, and there is such, God has much more in mind for us after this life. But from Solomon's perspective, it didn't go much beyond the grave, at least at this point in chapter 2. And so he thinks the wise and the fools, the fate is the same. Verse 17, "So I hated life. For the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after wind." And I think this explains the midlife crisis. People pursue one or two of these things that Solomon had, and they reach their goals. Finally, in their 40s, they reach the top of the hill that they've been climbing, and they get up there and they look around, and they're so disappointed. It doesn't bring the fulfillment that they were hoping for. And so they quickly try to start again to find this fulfillment. And they trade in the minivan for a sports car and trade in the wife for a newer model. And they're desperate to try to find this fulfillment, but it's not found in those things either. Solomon had it all, and he said, it's not found in any of those things. "Thus I hated all the fruit of my labor, for which I had labored under the sun. For I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool? Yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor, for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity. Therefore I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor, for which I had labored under the sun. When there is a man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, then he gives his legacy to one who has not labored with them. This too is vanity and a great evil. For what does a man get in all his labor and in his striving with which he labors under the sun? Because all his days his task is painful and grievous. Even at night his mind does not rest. This too is vanity." And I think he's saying people work so hard for the things that they want in life, and it's grievous and a painful task. And if they happen to get the things that they've been after, they then find they're not as satisfying as they were hoping for. And then they die. And then everything that they work so hard for goes to somebody else. Aren't you glad you came this morning for this encouraging message? Yeah. Well, he makes some application of all this that he's observing. Verse 24, there's nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor's good. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? For to a person who is good in his sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. While to the sinner, he has given the task of gathering and collecting, so that he may give to the one who is good in God's sight. And this too is vanity and striving after wind. And so I hear him saying, from what I see, here is the best thing for a human being to do in life. And he's just seeing this life, I think. I don't think he's seeing much beyond this life. And he's saying, don't strive for wealth and power and the things the people of the world are striving for. Trust me, it's not worth it. I've had it all. It's not worth the struggle. Work enough that you have what you need, that you can eat and drink. And savor the simple blessings of life. Savor just sitting down and having a meal. And tell yourself that your labor's good. Enjoy building the puzzle. And don't be in so much of a hurry to complete the puzzle, because once the puzzle's complete, you know, there's not a whole lot of reward after that. Enjoy working, having a sense of accomplishment. Don't work so hard that it's grievous and painful and you're working such long hours you don't enjoy building the puzzle, because that's one of the greatest blessings of life, is just working. So savor the simple blessings. Enjoy your work. And then he talks about being good in God's sight, which would involve fearing God and keeping His commandments. And he says, it seems that from what I see, those that are good in God's sight, God's enabled those people to have more joy in life than those that are just live sinful lives. And he says, this is what I'm seeing is the best thing for people to do on this earth. Enjoy the simple blessings, be content, enjoy your work, and just do things God's way in your life, and that'll be the happiest life. Just a couple other verses from Solomon, and then we'll listen to a happy man. Chapter 3, if you look at verse 18, he says, I said to myself concerning the sons of men, God has surely tested them in order for them to see that they are but beasts. For the fate of the sons of men and the fate of beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. Indeed, they all have the same breath, and there is no advantage for man over beast, for all is vanity. All go to the same place. All came from the dust, and all return to the dust. Who knows that the breath of man, or the spirit of man, ascends upward, and the breath of the beast descends downward to the earth? In other words, I think he's saying, who knows if when we die, we're not just dead like Rover and dead all over. Who knows if the spirit of man goes to be with God or not? From my perspective, I just see death. And now I think he developed and came out of that. When you get towards the end of the book, he will say dust returns to dust and the spirit of man returns to God who gave it. But at this point in chapter 3 and in these first few chapters, he's not seeing much beyond death. And listen to what he says at chapter 4 and verse 2. So I congratulated the dead who are already dead more than the living who are still living. Better off than both of them is the one who's never existed, who's never seen the evil activity that is done under the sun. That is not a happy man. And it doesn't matter how much you have, if you have no hope of something after this life, you cannot be happy no matter how much you have. And then just a bit more of his advice from what he sees. Verse 5 of chapter 4. The fool folds his hands and consumes his own flesh. You know, so don't, I mean, work for a living for what you need. Don't be lazy and consume your own flesh. But verse 6 he says, one hand full of rest is better than two fistfuls of labor and striving after the wind. Work for a living, but don't work so hard that you miss savoring the simple blessings of life. And I think of the humble fisherman. I think I've told you before, but the humble fisherman who is just sitting, relaxing beside a boat and looking calmly out over the sea. And this rich industrialist, entrepreneur kind of guy came by and he said, "Why aren't you out there fishing?" And the fisherman said, "Well, I've already caught enough fish for today." "Well, why don't you go catch more fish than you need?" "And why would I do that?" "Well, so that you can make more money. And if you make more money, then you could buy a bigger boat and you could go deeper and you could catch more fish. And then you could make more money. And then you could buy nylon nets and you could catch more fish and make more money. And then pretty soon you'd be able to have a fleet of ships and then you would be rich like me." And the fisherman says, "And then what would I do?" "Well, and then you'd be able to sit back and enjoy life." And the fisherman said, as he looked out calmly over the sea, "What do you think I'm doing now?" And you don't need a great abundance in order to enjoy life. One fistful of rest is better than two fistfuls of labor and striving. Now, let's get something a little more positive, and let's go to the New Testament. And here was a man who had very little, but he had the one thing I think that Solomon didn't have, and he had an inextinguishable joy. He was generally happy when he wasn't being beaten up and worried about false teachers destroying the churches that he established. But let me read to you a bit of his life. Acts 16 and verse 22, he's in Philippi, and it says, "The crowd rose up together against them, Paul and Silas, and the chief magistrates tore their robes off them and proceeded to order them to be beaten with rods. When they had struck them with many blows, they threw them into prison, commanding the jailer to guard them securely. And he, having received such a command, threw them into the inner prison and fastened their feet in the stocks." So they're black and blue and hurting, and they're in stocks, and Paul has no money, and he has no house, and he has no wife. Verse 25, "But about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns of praise to God." You could take everything he had. You could put him through a lot of pain, but you could not take away his joy. How could that be? Turn over to Philippians 3, and we'll just listen to some words from Paul here. Philippians 3, beginning at verse 7. He says, "But whatever things were gained to me," and he's talking about the things he used to have before he knew Christ, his standing in the Jewish community, his Jewish descent, his education, all of his Jewiness that he used to think was so important. "Whatever things were gained to me, those things I have counted as loss for the sake of Christ." It's all, not even zero, less than zero. "More than that, I count all things." Money, trophy, elk hunting, athletic achievement, houses, fame, everything the world's after, I count all things to be loss in view of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things and count them but rubbish so that I may gain Christ. You know, that word rubbish there was a term that referred to the worst kind of garbage and waste you can think of. If anybody has a King James, I think it translates it dung. And so Solomon may have seen everything as a breath or vapor, but Paul viewed it as dung. And I decided not to bring up a visual illustration of that one. But the reason he sees everything as dung is because he can see the surpassing value of knowing and having a relationship with Christ. And if he explains, verse 9, "If I have Christ, I may be found in him, not having a righteousness of my own derived from the law, but that which is through faith in Christ, the righteousness that comes from God on the basis of faith." He says, I want to know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being conformed to his death, in order that I may attain to the resurrection from the dead. Everything else was rubbish in comparison with knowing and having a relationship with Christ, because if you have Christ, then when this life is over, you will stand before God with the righteousness of Christ. You will stand before God as though you lived the perfect life that Christ lived, as though you're as worthy as Christ is, and there will be, you will be raised, and you will have everlasting life with God. One last passage from Paul. 1 Corinthians 15, beginning at verse 50. Now I say this, brethren, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, nor does the perishable inherit the imperishable. Behold, I tell you a mystery. We will not all sleep, but we will all be changed. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet, for the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised imperishable, and we will be changed. For this perishable must put on the imperishable, and this mortal must put on immortality. But when this perishable will have put on the imperishable, and this mortal will have put on immortality, then will come about the saying, as it is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your victory? O death, where is your sting? The sting of death is sin, and the power of sin is the law. But thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Lord. Have you ever seen that statement? It's a great one. If I can think of it. Only one life to live, it will soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. And that is the only not vain thing you can do in life. Every time you encourage another person, every time you send a card, or you make a call to check on someone, or you give to meet a need, or you do a good deed, or you teach someone about God. Every time you do something that would help people to know Christ or to stay faithful to Christ, it has significance, it has meaning, it has lasting value. It's like storing up treasures in heaven that you can never lose. And in eternity, when you see those people that you helped to be there, there's going to be joy over everything that you did in order to help those people. And so Solomon and Paul should help us to not waste our lives seeking fulfillment in this world, but to savor the simple things we have, to just serve Christ and just savor the blessings that God gives us as we serve Christ in this life. Let's stand together. Let's sing. If we could help you to obey God in your life, please come and let us help you.